Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
After months of waiting and all the anticipation, Zion Day finally did arrive yesterday, and it was amazing. Now, not the first three quarters of it, mind you. They were actually pretty measured, pretty careful, pretty cautious. I mean, pretty much what you'd expect for a player who was making his NBA regular season debut after knee surgery and had not played in a meaningful game since March. But still, even in the early going, there were some moments, there were some glimpses, like this pass to Brandon Ingram.
There's Williamson facing the double team. It's the open man, it's Ingram at the slam.
That said, the star of the first half was not Zion. It was this Pelicans fan who was doing absolutely incredible work when the Spurs went to the foul line. Check this guy yodeling for LaMarcus Aldridge.
He's 2 for 2 tonight.
Whoever did the tattoos on Lonzo.
LaMarcus! LaMarcus! Never mind Zion Day. That guy, whoever that guy is, deserves a day. You want to talk about a star being born? That was an incredible moment. The guy immediately put himself in the category of previous crowd mic legends, like the "We did it! We did it!" guy.
Oh, we did it! We did it!
Right in there with the "Kevin, Kevin, Kevin!"
Now it's still with that shoulder problem that he's had.
But he's screening better. See the full body contact, which makes Garnett shift, which gives him the chance to roll hard and get possession. He wasn't doing that in many of the previous games we've had. He's been slipping out early, which doesn't put the defense.
Well, Steve Nash.
That dude's the GOAT. That dude is the GOAT. Kevin!
Which doesn't position. He wasn't.
But aside from the legendary moment, that moment, most of the first three quarters were filled with people crying and complaining about Zion and his minutes. To which I would say, the hell did you expect? Of course, there were going to be short bursts. We knew this going in. Alvin Gentry said as much in the lead up to that game. Did you really think this guy was going to go out without playing in a meaningful game for nearly 10 months and immediately get 40 minutes and go 20-20? Hell no. This guy missed half the season. You don't just run him out, shove him off the high dive in his first game, even if that's what the fans, Twitter, and television would have wanted. And for all the dopes who were complaining that he wasn't playing long enough or acting like the Pelicans didn't give this guy enough minutes or that he'd get into more of a rhythm if they'd only let him. Pipe down. The Pelicans have a plan. They're working their plan. It's the right plan. They know last night was never going to be about last night. It was going to be about the rest of the season. It was going to be about the rest of his career. It's about a recovery plan and sticking to that plan, no matter how much it pisses everybody off. And as always, if Alvin Gentry listens to the people in the stands, he will be one of the people in the stands in no time at all. But still, the whining, the complaining, it continued. First it was annoying, then it became insulting, and then in the end, it was straight stupid. It got stupid when people were saying things like, "See, see, Zion is overrated. Zion is overhyped. Zion is just not that good." Yeah, well done. Solid take, especially since it was a take based on a 19-year-old getting maybe 12 minutes of NBA action. But then, the fourth quarter happened. Specifically, the middle of the fourth quarter happened. And it started with an assist from Zion to Josh Hart.
10. Zion took it away from Jakob Poeltl. You got space. He sees Etwan Moore, and he'll collaborate with Etwan on the bucket. 6-point game. Timeout San Antonio. Zion with a bullet pass.
So it was Hart, the dime to Hart, then that. Rebound, push the ball up the court, find a teammate for the bucket. But go back to the rebound itself for a moment, because that was a 7'1" guy that he grabbed that rebound over. A 7'1" grown-ass man with better position. And the teenager just bodied him, out-jumped him, got the rebound, started the break. And then that started the run, because those two assists were followed by this. Zion for three.
It's Alonzo. Ball back to Zion. Oh, my heaven. Straight away three.
Absolutely good. Huh? Everybody up.
Like, if there is an oh, my heavens and a huh after 1-3, you can imagine what was about to happen. Then Zion on an alley-oop.
Nobody expected that.
Nope.
Alley-oop Zion! Laying it good! From up top, Lonzo Ball. I think he's feeling it now, Daniel.
And here we go.
All right, so we were expecting that. But if Zion rattled in 1-3, how do you think it looked and felt when he did it again?
They have made big shot after big shot all night long. Now Zion again, straightaway three. Good again!
Just like they drew it up.
Uh-oh! The bleep is that. Zion knocking in two threes. Zion bodying another grown man in the paint.
Now Zion in the lane. Back it in, Pirtle. Missed the layup, got it back. Stick back, rattles in! There is nobody in this building that is sitting down. Nobody!
There's nobody in this country sitting down. During that run, Alvin Gentry had a sub ready to go in for Zion, but the game wouldn't stop. And the moment wouldn't stop. Zion for three again.
Ball, no look feed to Zion. Now he's got it. Right wing three again. Got it again! You have got to be kidding me!
They don't want to guard him out there.
That's a heat check!
That was a heat check. At that point, the roof was about to come right off the top of that building. It was incredible. Three for three from three. Are you kidding me? Then Alvin appeared to be calling for a timeout to get his guy out of the game. Lonzo Ball was not having any of that. Ball ran right through that stop sign to set up the big fella for this.
Up top Lonzo, back to Zion. Oh my, step back three. Left wing! Swish! No! This is not happening!
Stop it! No, seriously, Zion, stop it! That was incredible. 4 for 4 from three for a guy who is not known as a three-point shooter. 17 points in just over 3 minutes in an NBA game. No, correction, in his NBA debut. Took the Pelicans from down double digits to giving them the lead before he left that game. He finished with 22 points, 7 rebounds, and 3 assists in 18 minutes. Is that any good? You still want to come in here with your great takes about how overrated this guy is, about how overhyped this guy is. Look, I'm not saying that he's a Hall of Famer after one game, but he gave you a glimpse of what he could be, and that look was awesome. That was an electric moment. It didn't even have an electric dunk in it. Jrue Holiday said he was hyped watching that shooting display from deep.
I mean, after the first one, I was like, all right, cool. And then the second one came, the second three, and I was like, all right, boy, you've been practicing. And then the third one, and from that point on, man, just the energy was crazy. But we've seen him do this since high school. This is what he does. So as exciting as it was, is it really that much of a surprise?
That's a great point. That's a great point by Holiday. Nobody should be surprised by this because we have seen this from him for a while now. But at the same time, a guy making his NBA debut in January after knee surgery should not make it look that easy. Except Zion did, and he's barely scratching the surface. Again, don't get it twisted. There are going to be rough nights. I know this. And times where he looks like a rookie. But I'm not interested in hearing from people talking about 5 turnovers last night or the fact that they lost that game. Nor am I looking for people to blame the head coach for taking him out of the game in the fourth quarter and refusing to put him back in when the crowd was chanting his name. You know, you can't always give the people what they want. I know it felt like they could have won that game last night if he stayed in that game, but the Pelicans do have a plan. The plan is about working Zion into game shape, being cautious, not taking any unnecessary risks with their franchise player. You're not going to risk this guy's future so they can win his very first game. It's the right plan, a good plan. I respect it. Hey, clones, the question of the day. What do we want when we're craving protein or we need more energy? I can tell you what we don't want. We don't want another bar or another sugary snack or another energy drink. No, instead we want beef. Pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your old man's jerky. It's not shriveled. It's not dry. It's not tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and tasty. It's not tough. What makes it so good? I'm going to say it's the company behind it. Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. And Old Trapper is packed with protein. It comes in four amazing flavors to satisfy all your cravings. It's quality smoked meat at its finest, and it goes wherever you go. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're purchasing. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, be sure to ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef?
You have got to be kidding me!
We got a taste of the Zion experience last night, and it was incredible. It was worth the wait. He didn't just live up to the hype, he smashed it. And in a league of freakish talent, there may not be another like him. He might be one of one. Because for the life of me, I still can't wrap my head around the fact that he hit four threes in his first NBA game when this is not a guy who's known for shooting threes. It was incredible. But then again, understand, we have never seen anybody quite like this. Yes, it will take time to see exactly where this 6'6", 285-pound dude with a 6'10 wingspan and a 45-inch vert and eye-popping athleticism fits in while he learns the NBA game. Is he a 4? Is he a small ball 5? Is he a .5? My eyes tell me yes. Yes to everything. He's 19, a special, special dude, and this is going to be an amazing process to watch. Quit hating, start celebrating Zion. Kyle Lowry is my guest. Kyle, I really do appreciate it. Great to have you back. How are you?
Hey, Jim. How you doing, buddy? It's always good to be in the show. How are you?
Great. I'm great. Kyle, really good to hear your voice. So you beat Philadelphia last night in a game where you had six guys go for 16 or more. Let me start there. How pleased were you with the win, and what's to say about the depth of the team that you had that many guys play that big last night?
You know, it was a good win for us. You know, at one point I looked up, I think all of us had like between 15 and 16 points, the guys that were on the floor. But that just shows the depth that we have in our team and, you know, kind of the unselfishness of our team. You know, we don't care who, if there's one guy that gets 40 and 30, you know, we try to, you know, make sure everyone's confident in the situations that they're in. And, you know, during the playoffs, you know, we're going to need everyone to step up. So it just gives us some time look at what guys can do and throughout the season to get some confidence and ready to go for the long haul.
Kyle Lowry, my guest. Look, it's never going to be easy. You know this, but the team has already dealt with injuries and changes to the roster since last season, but you're still in first place in the division. It seems like folks outside your locker room expected you guys to take a step back after winning it all, but that's not what happened. What was the mindset of the team this season coming in?
I mean, we've always been good. You know, honestly, we were always good. The years before, we always made the playoffs, made a good run. I don't know why people counted us out, but they did, and that's their personal opinions. For us, all we did was just go out here and work. You know, we got the same, you know, same type of professional athletes that we have. We have real life pros that want to win, that have won at a high level. And, you know, we got guys that just know how to play the game of basketball. And we understand that, you know, it's never going to be easy. But, you know, if you play like a unit in a team, you know, anything can happen.
Now, Kyle, I want to go back to a game about a month ago against the Mavericks where you guys were down 30. I mean, yeah. I'm still blown away by this game. You were down 30 with less than 3 minutes to go in the third quarter. Normally a team might say at that point, man, it's not our day. It's a long, long season. We live to fight another day. Let's shut it down and keep moving. But that's not what you guys did. You start to play lockdown defense. You had 20 in the fourth quarter. You come all the way back. You win that game. Why is it that you guys didn't give into that moment? And what's to say about the mental and physical toughness and the pride of this team?
Well, I think we just, you know, coaches like, look, let's make a big run. Let's see if we can make a run. Let's go out here and play hard. We do a kind of a press on, and we just kind of play hard. And that's what our team does. You know, at the end of the day, you don't play, you know, until the third quarter. You play four quarters. You play 48 minutes. You play until that last horn goes off. And that's what we did. And that's the mental approach that we have, right? We have the mental approach that the game's never over. We're always going to have an opportunity to win games. We're always going to have an opportunity to be in a game and compete. And, you know, at the end of the day, the physicality that we had got length. We had guys coming off the bench. And we were down a bunch of men, but you know, we found a way to win the game, and that just shows, you know, the team that we put together and the pros and the guys that we have on our team play hard.
He's a world champion. He's a gold medalist. Kyle Lowry back in the jungle. Look, I understand that you're focused on this season and the potential this team has, but if you were to go back to June for a moment, like, what did it feel like when you first won that NBA championship? And then when it all sunk in, how did it feel to know that you are an NBA champ and nobody can ever take that from you?
You know, I think it's a feeling that you can't explain, right? It's nothing that you could possibly say, oh, it felt like this, it felt like that. It's an unimaginable high. And, you know, that's what, you know, that's what it feels like. It's just a feeling that you just can't, like, you know, you can't replace that feeling with nothing else but winning another championship. And, you know, the point, like you said, the thing about winning a champion, being a champion, is it never can be taken away from you. And, you know, knowing that we got one of the biggest rings ever made, we go back and look at that and say, yeah, we got that.
No doubt. You know, Kyle, if they could bottle what you have, like, I want you to talk about this for a minute. You battled through a lot during that postseason run, including a torn ligament in your thumb. In terms of bottling that, like, how were you able to deal with everything and still show up and deliver on the biggest stage every single time?
Well, I mean, you got to go out there and do your job. And for me, you know, we were, you know, we kind of honestly, we were, you know, shooting it up every game, numb the ligament so I can go play. But I was just going out there and knowing that the toughness is needed. And this is a chance to be something, to do something special and to do something, you know, you never know if you're going to do it again. You never know if you're going to do it again. So you go out there and just give it your all. And honestly, that's what I did. And that's why it was so fun. And we just gave it our all. And I was, you know, whatever it took, you know, lidocaine in the thumb and make sure it's numb and whatever it takes to get a championship, it was worth it.
Kyle Lowry joining me for a few more moments. And then you took that Larry O trophy back to North Philly to the Cecil B. Moore Recreational Center and the Hank Gathers Youth Access Center. I know that was something that you had in mind from the moment you won. Why was it so important for you to bring that trophy back home? And then what was that part of the experience like?
You know what? It was like literally as soon as I won a championship, I was like, you know, I have to take this home. And it was just more like, you know, to show the kids in the community that you can, anything's possible. A guy from your neighborhood, a kid that was in your situation, growing up how you grew up, and you grew up the same way I grew up. Is anything can happen, and just try to work hard. Just continue to work hard, and you never know what's going to happen. You never know what situation you're going to be in. You never know how the situation is going to turn out. You know, that's the thing. That's why I took it back home, and it was most important to take it right back home.
And then Villanova announced last week that your jersey is going to be retired next month. What was your reaction when you heard that, and what does that honor mean to you? How's that sound?
Oh, man, I can't wait, honestly, to be able to go up in the Raptors at that great school, a place that I still call home. You know, I'm there every day. That's where I train at. To be able to say that I'll be up there forever, it's a lifetime dream and something that, honestly, I never imagined would happen, and it's happening, so I'm really happy with it, and I'm excited. I can't wait.
Hey, Kyle, a couple of quick things. I think right now you have an amazing coach. I love the guy you play for, and I love the guy you used to play for. I had Jay Wright on the show earlier this year, and he talked about how proud he was of you as he watched you win that ring last season and what you mean to him and the program. How would you describe Jay Wright as a coach and the relationship you have with him?
Well, I mean, me and Coach talk. He literally would text me after every single game. I think Jay is one of the best coaches in college basketball. I think he's one of the best men in college basketball. I think he's one of the best mentors and teachers in college basketball. He means the world to me. You know, he gave a kid from North Philly a chance. He pushed me to be better. He pushed me to say, listen, you need to do this. This is how we're going to do this. But it was nothing about basketball. Legit, we talked never about basketball. We talked about how to be a man, how to be, you know, an adult, how to take things and be a legit person and say, listen, I messed up. How do I fix it? Or what do I do to kind of move on? And Jay has been important to me, and he still is important to me. And, you know, he's one of my biggest fans, and I do anything for that guy.
I appreciate that. Last thought, Kyle. So Cleveland's Tristan Thompson called you, quote, a Hall of Famer. He said he's a five-time All-Star. He's an Olympic gold medalist. He's an NBA champ. He's their backbone. I mean, in short, you've accomplished pretty much everything there is to accomplish at this level, and yet you seem hungrier now than ever before. So what motivates you and what drives you now?
First of all, Tristan, that is a great compliment. I mean, for a guy that's a champion and a guy that, you know, I battled against, that's a compliment, you know, for your peers to think like that. And, you know, I appreciate that. Seriously, I miss it. And I'm always going to be hungry. I'm never going to be satisfied for who I am. I'm always going to try to continue to grow and get better. And that's the biggest thing is where I come from. You don't make it by just saying, oh, okay, I got this. You make it by going harder and harder.
Kyle Lowry, Toronto Raptors point guard, NBA champion, five-time All-Star, Olympic gold medalist. My man, it had been a moment or two. It is so good to have you back on the show. I really appreciate that, Kyle. Thank you so much.
James, you know, thank you. Anytime, man. Anytime.
He is Ben Golliver. Ben, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. I'm down here in New Orleans. It's just like the afterglow of Zion Williamson's debut. I think I'm still buzzing a little bit. Wild night. I mean, starts so slow, then just, you know, cranks it all the way up in the fourth quarter. And then they just shut him down. He disappears for crunch time because of the minutes limit. I feel like it was just a very layered and textured kind of narrative performance, right? A little bit of like good, bad, and the ugly.
You've done this before, Ben. You already hit on like five of my questions. But let me start right there. You were in New Orleans last night. You still are. You were there for the debut. Now, you and I have talked about this in the past, but for the record, how many times had you seen him play in person before last night?
Look, I'm getting this reputation. I heard from so many people last night that they're convinced I'm the jinx, Jim, because I've seen him twice. The first time he blew his shoe at North Carolina when he played for Duke. The second time he made it 8 minutes into his summer league debut after they sold the whole building out and tickets were going for $400 for a scrimmage, and he gets a minor knee injury and he was done there. So I was two for two on kind of ruining his basketball night. And he started so slow, right? I mean, the first three quarters, people were saying, you got to leave the building. We need this guy to kind of turn it on, and you're the jinx.
Yeah, Ben Golliver joining us. And that's right, people were losing their minds for all the wrong reasons in the early going. Like, Ben, what kind of expectations did you have for him in his debut? Because, you know, there were so many people just waiting to say he's overrated, he's going to be a bust. Like, in your mind, what would have been a successful night?
Yeah, I came in expecting something like 16-8. You know, I thought that was kind of a conservative. I knew there was going to be a minutes limit, but I feel like when he's on the court, he just racks up stats. He's one of those guys where, you know, his physical presence is always felt. I didn't know how he would look physically. During the pregame warmups, he took it kind of easy. You know, he didn't really break out the through the leg windmills and all that stuff. So I was wondering, okay, well, maybe is he trying to ease back into this? And I think that's really how it went to start. I mean, Alvin Gentry said it, he played passive for the first half. And they basically needed to kind of unleash him in the second half. But I started to see some of the things I was hoping for. When he's going through and grabbing contested rebounds and bodies are just flying off of him, when he's catching a lob pass in traffic and finishing it with his left hand over the defense, when he's stepping up confidently and hitting those three-pointers, that's not the book on him, Jim. He's not known as a three-point shooter at all. I mean, that was never the strength of his game. San Antonio and Greg Popovich were just trying to dare him to shoot it, and he just kept shooting, and hit four of them in a row. So we got a little bit of everything from him, but I do think I maybe expected just a touch more because I thought he would play more. And limiting him to 18 minutes, it feels very conservative, very restrained from the Pelicans. And you can just tell they're trying to take the cautious approach.
We're talking to Ben Golliver. That's interesting. I was going to say to you, because no sooner than that went down, the complaining started online and on the broadcast about that minutes restriction, almost implying that the team really didn't know what the hell they were doing. So what do you make? You started that thought. What do you make of how David Griffin, Alvin Gentry, and the Pelicans training staff have handled his recovery from the very start, actually?
Well, I'll tell you this. I mean, first of all the complainers, they're just like kids at a candy store, and the candy store closed early. You know what I mean? And
right.
They're looking in through the window saying, oh, man, I want to keep eating, basically. I mean, nobody wanted that night to end early. They stretched out his recovery basically an extra month from the original timeline. He was supposed to come back in kind of early to mid-December. They wound up being very cautious. He said he was very frustrated. On Tuesday, he told reporters he felt like he wanted to kick some chairs at various points of his recovery because he just couldn't move how he wanted to move, and it was dragging on and taking so long. And so for him to finally get a taste of the action, to really put it together in the fourth quarter, and then to have to watch from the sidelines, it's got to be agonizing. But you know what, Jim? I kind of like it. He pushed back a little bit in his post-game press conference. He wasn't just going by the book of saying what, the right thing to say, quote-unquote. He was saying, I wanted to be out there. I'm not worried about my longevity of my career. I want to go out there and win a game. I love his competitive spirit. I think it's a huge part of what makes him such a tantalizing prospect going forward and such an important figure for basketball going forward. And the idea that he's just over there seething because he didn't get to be on the court for crunch time, they lose that game, I think, honestly, that could be the best thing to happen to him, because as he goes forward, he's going to remember to cherish those moments once he gets them.
Ben Golver is joining us. He's in New Orleans. So let's talk about him going forward. Nobody, as you point out, Ben, is expecting him to be an elite three-point shooter over the course of a season. So what did you make of the rest of his offensive game? Like, was that where you ultimately expected to be, or is that still a major work in progress as he continues to get into shape?
Yeah, he needs to get into better shape. I mean, for sure. He was, you know, clutching his shorts and holding his waist during pregame warmups. And like I said, he wasn't really going that hard. So that was a little bit of a warning sign to me. You saw him come out very early in the third quarter. Again, he had a couple turnovers, was really tired, and Alvin Gentry was basically just like, look, you know, catch your breath. I mean, that's what it looked like to me anyways. So I think we're going to see more from his offensive portfolio as he does get back into shape. But what really stands out to me is just the quick burst. He goes from 0 to 60 off the dribble so quickly. He's really tough to contain in those scenarios. And then they also do a really nice job of mixing it up offensively. So he's on the move a lot, and it's almost like a, you know, a football running back going into motion or something like that. They play a very unique style to maximize his athletic gifts. So we're going to see a lot more from him offensively than we saw on Wednesday night. He looked a little bit bottled up and contained. He did look like he struggled to finish in traffic around really long defenders, and that could be an issue for him because he is a little bit shorter. And I do think they're going to play him at center a lot. So he's going to be going against guys who are longer than him, you know, pretty regularly. But, you know, to me, there was enough flashes to be, you know, come away from it thinking it was a promising start. And I just think there's going to be more to come. You know, all the pressure, you know, all the anticipation. I mean, he was talking about how he couldn't sleep the night before. There's dozens of media members at their practice. I mean, the whole thing is, you know, it's a real show down here. And I think as he acclimates to that, as he gets more comfortable to that, we're going to see his natural skills unleashed.
He's 19. Let's not lose track of that fact. Ben Golver joining us. You know, Ben, that point you made about him going from 0 to 60 down the court and doing it so fast, you know, with that power, a couple of moments really stick out to me. I love that rebound that he had over Jakob Poeltl, who, by the way, had much better position, is much taller, but Zion just bodies this guy and out-jumps him for the rebound and then starts to break the other way at a very high speed. What did you think when you saw him do that?
Well, have we ever seen a guy posterize someone on a rebound? I mean, is that what
right.
happened? I think we have
exactly.
a new category for to track for Zion Williamson. Oh, it's crazy. You mentioned his age a minute ago. Can we return to that? Because so many teenagers who would started slow in a high-pressure moment like that, or even just NBA players in general, regardless of age, they would get to that fourth quarter and say, you know what, I got my feet wet, everything's cool. There might be that tendency to just mentally settle and to say, you know what, like, you know, write it off. You know, I can come back and play again on Friday night. There's going to be another 40 games for the season. You know, chalk it up, and it's okay. I just had an off night, right? Zion did the exact opposite. He did not settle. He welcomed the pressure. He stepped into those three-pointers so confidently. They were daring him to shoot it, and he was like, you know what, screw that. I'm going to go out there and do it. And I love that response from him. Again, I think we focus so much on the physical tools, the overwhelming stuff, that the mental makeup gets lost, the competitive spirit, the desire to be the center of attention, you know, feeding off of the crowd, you know, a couple heat checks in there for sure as the crowd was getting excited. He understands the moment. And then there's just this charisma and this moxie about him too, Jim. He's got the star power, and these are reasons why I'm so high on him, and I've kind of been you know, banging the drum for Zion here for the last couple of years.
No, you certainly have. You certainly have. You said, in fact, and Ben, I know this, you regard him as your large adult son. So as yeah. being his, since he's your large adult son and you're his not as large adult father, what would you say to him after that performance? And what do you want him thinking about going forward?
Yeah, you know, it's a proud moment for his adopted family. Look, I think there's a lot of people here in New Orleans who are catching the fever, right? This is a football town. I went around and talked to people for a story for the Washington Post yesterday. It just basically like, what do they make of Zion, right? And they're still in this kind of hangover effect from LSU football's title, which was only a couple weeks ago, and the Saints season just ended. And so this idea that they can kind of ramp up for Zion, it's kind of convenient timing for them. But they're also not used to be, you know, treating Pelicans players in the same way that they would treat like a Joe Burrow or, you know, Coach O there for LSU. I mean, those guys are like kings. They're deities down here. And I think, you know, even during the height of the Anthony Davis era, maybe he never quite ascended to that level. But I think Zion, you know, it's a phenomenon, right? I mean, we see it nationally. Everyone wants to talk about it. He's going to lead all sports coverage here basically for the next 24 hours. And even the 24-hour run-up to the game, you know, he was the lead story pretty much everywhere. That's going to continue. And I think here locally, I think that the fans and the fan base are going to really realize what they've got with this kid. There's going to be more special moments. And I think he's going to just be the adopted son of the city.
I mean, he is electric. So, Ben, do they feel like a playoff team with Zion?
Well, here's my problem. The playoff race is so crowded that even a loss like last night for them, it matters a lot, right? I mean, there's so many different teams, like five, six different teams all jockeying for that eighth seed. And they're, you know, playing from behind because they got themselves into a little hole when Zion was out. To expect him or to put the pressure on him to turn that whole thing around and down the stretch and to play consistently enough coming off of an injury to sort of be the boost that they need, I think that's expecting a little bit too much. You got some good teams in there, San Antonio, Memphis. I mean, they're both starting to put it together. Even Phoenix has been putting it together here pretty recently. So they've got some hurdles for sure. The good news, though, they have a very easy schedule the rest of the way. And I think, I mean, just imagine the payoff, Jim. Can you imagine the first-round series, Lakers versus Pelicans,
amazing.
LeBron versus Zion, Anthony Davis's old team versus his new team, Lonzo, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart against their former team. I mean, the storylines would be crazy. TV ratings would be out of control. I'm sure somewhere in New York City, Adam Silver's, you know, kind of circling that one and saying, man, maybe we can get that.
I mean, it would be one of the best things ever. He is a national NBA writer for the Washington Post. He's the host of Greatest of All Talk, an NBA show, host of Open Floor Podcast, and as I mentioned, a very good friend of the program. Ben, great job. Thank you so much, and I really appreciate your thoughts.
My pleasure, Jim. Take care, man.
All right, so let's talk about a common problem for just 1 minute. The one thing that health experts, dietitians, athletes, and even top performers all seem to agree upon is the perfect diet simply does not exist. Even with a balanced, healthy diet, it can be so hard to cover all your nutritional bases through food alone. This is why there is Athletic Greens. The Athletic Greens Ultimate Daily All-in-One Health Drink has 75 proven vitamins, minerals, and whole food source ingredients, which make it easier for you to get that comprehensive nutrition without the need for a bunch of pills, powders, and complex routines. What I'm saying is, it is the most complete supplement for a better you. And it's different from anything else I've ever tried. It's different because it's delivered in powder form and it's mixed with water. Athletic Greens requires fewer capsules. It has superior absorption. It does not include any binders or fillers. One scoop of Athletic Greens provides a convenient, affordable, and tasty solution to fill the gaps in your diet. So if you're looking to boost energy, strengthen your immune system, or support gut health, this is the perfect product for you. Whether you're taking steps towards a healthier lifestyle or you're an athlete pushing for better performance, Athletic Greens takes the guesswork out of everyday good health. Why not try it? Jump on over to athleticgreens.com/Rome. Claim my special offer right now. 20 free travel packs valued at $79 with your first purchase. athleticgreens.com/Rome. Nikola Vucevic is my guest. Nikola, nice to have you back. How are you?
Thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm great. It's good to have you on. Thank you very much. So you dropped a tough one to Oklahoma City last night, but you put up really big numbers. Let me start there. How do you go about processing that loss and making sure you're ready for a big one against Boston tomorrow night?
Well, I think that the longer you're in the NBA, I think you learn to kind of have to put tough losses behind or even big wins and you just move on. It's just the job we're in. I know they're part of it. And you can't celebrate too long. You can't dwell too long. You just have to learn and move on. And, you know, obviously yesterday was a tough game. You know, it went right down to the last minute. You know, we had a chance. We came up short. But, you know, we won some games that way during the year as well. So you move on. You prepare for the next one. Obviously, another tough one for us against Boston at home. But it would be a fun one to play for sure.
You know, I would imagine it must have felt like you had been away for a long time, forever. Like last night's game was your first game at home in nearly 2 weeks after a road trip where you went to Phoenix, Sacramento, followed by two games in L.A., then Golden State, and finally Charlotte. You capped off that trip with a win in Charlotte to go 3-3 on the trip. How big was that win against the Hornets to make sure you ended that road trip the right way?
That was a big win for us. I think, you know, 3-3 on the West Coast trip like that, it's always, you know, it's always pretty decent. You know, we lost to Golden State over there, played a poor game, and so we were very disappointed, and I was really happy with our response. I think it was important. And those are very, you know, tough games. When the first game back from the West Coast, it was kind of in a weird time of day, 2 at 5 for us as well. So it was a little, you know, out of our rhythm, but we figured out. We played a great game. I don't think many teams have beaten them the way we did, and it was great to have that response after that tough loss in Golden State. So, it was a good trip for us. It was, I think, our toughest that we're going to have all year, and so to come back 500 from it, it was very good for us.
It's good to be talking to Orlando Magic basketball. Nikola Vucevic is my guest. Now, you clinched the playoff spot in the final game of the year in Boston last year, and then you played Toronto in the first round, and you won the first game of that series. How different do the playoffs feel from the regular season? And then how much does being there last year motivate you to get right back this year?
Well, it's obviously different because you play one team multiple times in a week, 2 weeks period. So the preparation is different. You really have to be on top of, your game, their game. Make sure you do the scouting right, that their plays, the players' tendencies, and you have to execute every game. And it's kind of a lot of repetition, but also at the same time you have to make adjustments. And I think for us it was our first time for a lot of us to be in that situation as having big roles on a playoff team, and we ran into the world champs, who played great, and thought that defensively against them we did pretty well. It's just offensive. We couldn't generate enough offense, but I think overall it was a very good experience for us and definitely motivated us, to keep that up. And after six years without, going to the playoffs, we're back in it, and it was a great experience. It really motivated us. So this year we're looking forward, to get back in it and do even better. So we believe that we can do that. But I think that just getting that feeling back of winning, going there, being part of the big stage, it's so much more fun than going home after 82 games and being done with it. This was so much better for all of us, and especially our younger players.
Nikola Vucevic is joining us. Hell yes, it's better. It's way better. Now, you are currently in seventh in the East. So when you guys are clicking, does it feel like a team that can not only get there but make some noise once you do get there?
Well, we believe so. We think we have the pieces to do that. I think that our defense, can be one of the top defenses in the NBA consistently when we're really locked in and we do our job. On the offensive end, we're still trying to figure things out, but hopefully, in these last 40 games, we can really click on that end as well, and then we have a balanced game on both ends of the floor, which gives you a good chance. But I think that we match up with pretty well with a lot of those top teams in the East, and that we could have a chance. Obviously, Milwaukee is very, very good. So that would be a very tough matchup for anybody. But I think that with other teams, we show that we can play. But obviously, there's still a lot of basketball to be played. I think for now, our focus has to be on us, how we can be better, how we can improve. So when the time comes, we can be ready to play at our best.
Now, you're one of a number of players on the Magic who played in the FIBA World Cup over the summer. When I had Steve Clifford on before the season, he felt like that would be a great advantage because of how tough that competition is and because you'd be playing at an elite level all summer long. So what was the experience like for you, and what was your biggest takeaway?
That was a fun experience. For my country, it was our first time to go to the World Cup. So it was a great achievement for us. And we obviously were one of the favorites there. We just wanted to go there and play the best that we can. But I think that there was a great experience for me. The game is a little different, so you have to play a little different. That's a good learning experience as well. Every game is very meaningful. There's no games that don't mean anything. You always play for something, so your approach is also different. That was great, and then there were a lot of great players there that played against. We played against Greece in our group, so I played against Giannis. Then we also had Brazil and New Zealand, so it was just being out there playing against different styles of basketball in each country, kind of playing their own way. And then also going to China, being part of the whole experience was just a fun experience. I think also helps you kind of you play meaningful games throughout the summer, so you already kind of your mindset is already kind of locked in already. So. It definitely helped. The only thing that's kind of difficult is when you're done with it. You have like 2-3 weeks when you want to rest, but at the same time, stay in shape. So when camp hits, you're ready. So that kind of throws you off a little bit, but I'm happy I was part of it. It was a good experience. We did okay as a team, but, we didn't have high expectation again. So, but just great to be there, to represent your country, especially since it was our first time.
Orlando big man Nikola Vucevic joining me for a few more moments. Now, you were recently named the Magic's Player of the Decade. What did that mean to you? And when you look back on the last decade and the impact you've had on that team and that organization, how much pride is there for you?
That's a lot of pride. And I think nowadays it's difficult to stay with one team for a long time. And now it's my eighth season with the Magic. I wish that we had more team success while I was here, but know, things are starting to turn around and they're looking better. So that's the positive. But, you know, kind of went through the whole rebuilding process. It wasn't always easy. You know, there were difficult times, you know, some setbacks and stuff. But I think that, you know, overall, when I look back at it, you know, it's just going to always, you know, be special for me. It's always be, you know, one of the, you know, best Magic players to ever play. You know, having my name on all, you know, the all-time lists, you know, games played, points, rebounds, all that. When you look at the other names that are on those lists, you know, it's definitely very humbling, you know, to be amongst players like Shaq, Dwight, Penny Hardaway, you know, Jameer Nelson, all those guys that played, you know, just to have your name against them, Nick Anderson, it's just, you know, it's very humbling. And as a kid, you never thought of that to be possible. And now, you know, I'm there and I'm still trying to climb up. It's a very, you know, prideful thing.
Dennis Scott, there have been some great, great players there.
Yes.
Now, since the last time you and I spoke, you were named to your first All-Star game last season. What do you remember about that moment when you were named to the team, and it was before the game against the Pacers, when the PR wizards themselves, Joel Glass and George Galante, were watching the announcements, and they found out that you made it?
Yeah, it was a moment I remember for my whole life. It was just... And I knew it was about to be announced at like 7, and that's kind of usually when their national anthem is played. So I was just standing. You know, the anthem was about to be played. It was just a moment before, like right before the anthem was about to be performed. I heard either Joel or George yell yes, and I turned around, and they showed me come up that I was in. And I think it was, and then I looked at my parents were in the stand, so I looked right at them and I showed them that I was in. And then I think that the fact that the anthem was right after that, it kind of helped me gather myself together, because it was however long the anthem is, a minute or so. I had the time to kind of gather myself, get my emotions together, and be ready to play. But it was, I mean, an amazing moment. Just, you know, I worked so hard for it, and you know, just, you know, it was, I mean, it's so, you know, humbling to be named an All-Star. It's so hard. You see all these great players in history that haven't had a chance to make it. You know, it's only 12 in each conference, and every season there's so many players that deserve to be in it that don't necessarily get their name called. And so it was a, you know, very, very proud moment for me, and I was very happy to be there to represent my team. And also, I think since we went through a lot of, you know, losing seasons and not much success, I think that also showed that we were on the right way, and then I was able to be there and represent not only myself but the team and show that we were on the right path. So it was great, and the whole experience as well, being there, was amazing, and hopefully there'll be many more to come.
I was going to say, not only that, you're getting a lot of attention and a lot of run for another trip to the All-Star game this year, so you might find out again and have another experience to share with us. Last thought before you go. Now, you and I have talked about your love of Star Wars in the past. What did you make of The Rise of Skywalker?
It's a tricky one. I mean, I kind of went into the, like, when I went to see it, I was kind of like, I'm not going to, like, go in with a negative mindset. I'm going to, like, you know, try to just enjoy the movie and, you know, see how it works. And it was an enjoyable movie. I think if you go really into details and, like, really go deep into the whole Star Wars world, sure, there were, like, some missed things, some holes and stuff that don't exactly make sense. But I think that overall it was an enjoyable movie. They went back in some of the, like, original story stuff, and I thought I did a decent job. It was an enjoyable movie to watch. It was way better than The Last Jedi. So I came out, you know, quite happy. I enjoyed it. It was definitely not bad like The Last Jedi was. So, you know, you can go either way. You know, I went with a positive mindset, so I enjoyed it. Some people that I know don't really didn't like it, but I think it was just hard after the episode 8. So many things were off and didn't make any sense. It was just hard to finish it. And, but I thought it did okay, and it was definitely fun to see it. So I think now there won't be many movies for a while. They kind of want to see what they're going to do. But overall, I'd say it was a good experience, fun to watch. It wasn't like the originals, but I don't think they can ever, you know, redo the originals. They're one of a kind.
Hey, listen, one last thought. I know, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad that it was a good experience, because I know your last experience was not a good experience.
No.
Because you said on Twitter, quote, "The Last Jedi sucked so bad."
Yeah.
Or this tweet, quote, "Seeing that The Last Jedi is trending on Twitter and that some people are trying to defend it, but I'm sorry, it straight up sucks." End quote.
Yeah.
We'll close the book on this finally, but what was it about The Last Jedi that bothered you so much?
Well, I just think that like they went away from everything that Star Wars kind of stands for, and that's kind of what bothered me, because people that really like Star Wars, are really into it, they understand that it's not just a movie. There's so many things you can do. It's like a whole universe, and there's like the dark side, and then there's like the good side, and then. I mean, I think to me, it's like so much deeper than just like a regular movie where like you're like Jedi fighting and lightsabers and whatever. And so I just felt like in La Jedi, they kind of, in a way, disrespected a lot of it. Like they made Luke Skywalker look terrible. Like they made Leia look bad. They just went away from everything that it stands for. And as a fan, you know, you just like, it was just, to me, it was not good. And then they try to make it like funny and a comedy when it's not. Like Star Wars is pretty dark, actually. And so to me, that's what bothered me the most. Like, you can't just disrespect everything that happened before. And like the first scene, like we've been waiting to see Luke for so long, and he gets the lightsaber and then just like throws it away when he's supposed to be the greatest Jedi of all time. And you're like, this doesn't like make any sense. So to me, it was just mainly that. But then, you know, they try to kind of fix it in the ninth movie. So that's why I appreciate it a little bit. But yeah, it was just not a good movie overall. I just couldn't like, it was really disappointing for me. After I left the theater, it was hard for me.
Nicola, I appreciate that. Let me finally ask you. I remember as a kid, like I'm old enough. I didn't have to see it first one on demand. I saw it when it dropped. I was at the movie theater in Los Angeles as a kid. It was amazing. We must have been online 5 hours. And as a kid, I'll never forget walking out of that theater after seeing what I just saw, because I had never seen anything like that. Do you remember where and when you were when you saw the very first Star Wars and what you thought?
Yeah, actually, I do. It was the first one I saw was Phantom Menace. I've heard of them before, but I never watched them, like the originals. And so the first one I saw was Phantom Menace, and it was really random. My mom was like, "Hey, this movie came out. You want to go see it?" Like everybody talks about it. I'm like, "Sure." And then I went, and I enjoyed it. And so then I got into it a little bit more, and I found out that they were about the originals and everything a little more. And then I rewatched all of them. I watched all of the originals, and then slowly I got into it. I didn't really get into it like deeply until I got a little older, to where I could kind of more understand it. But yeah, that was the first one that I saw, Phantom Menace, which now when I try to watch it, it's good, but it's a little hard to watch. It's not as good as when I was younger.
KU doesn't have to shoot. If it ends right now, it's going to be a doubled up final tally. I think that's where it's going to end. Tristan Inarritu has it taken away by Pappas as he was trying to dribble out the clock. And Pappas throws down a dunk and then gets up in Inarritu's face. He's going to get teed up, and he should. KU was doing the classy thing and running out the clock. Pappas then comes in, takes the ball away, throws a dunk, and then talks trash. He needs to get back to New Jersey with that type of attitude.
Alexis, nice to have you on the air. How are you?
Hey, Jim Rome. How are you?
I'm great. So are you really George Pappas' mother?
I am Georgie Pappas's mother, the one and only.
That is great. So it's so nice to meet you. So what motivated you to make this phone call today, Alexis?
Well, first of all, Jim, I've been trying to get you that jersey. It's coming your way soon.
Super. Love it. Love it. I will look forward to that, and I will wear it. So what do you make of this whole thing? Like, when that whole thing went down, and you're
Go ahead. And his father and I happened to be there at that epic moment at The Rock when he pulled the trigger with the last 5 seconds and made the dunk. The steal, the dunk, the flex, the curse out, the tee. I guess you did everything you possibly could do in 5 seconds, right or wrong. And it was exciting for all of us. If we could have changed it, we probably would have done without the flexing and the tee and the cursing. But it was a good moment for our family.
Well, Alexis, that is super. That is so great the way you laid that out. So I'm curious, like when you grow up and little Georgie is playing in all of his little tournaments and he's running around and he gets to play college basketball, the whole thing's got to be so thrilling. What happens when a moment like that puts your family in the spotlight and all of a sudden the Pappas family is viral?
Well, we loved the people that thought George was great, and the people that didn't think George was great, we were furious with. Because if you know George, you love him because he's got passion and he's got spunk and he doesn't quit. And I was very upset when the sports writers were saying that it wasn't classy, because I don't know how many Division I basketball games they've played at in The Rock. So what do they know about what the last 5 seconds is in a game when you're playing against Kansas?
So what was Georgie afterwards when you guys got together and talked about that? Like, what was going through his mind in that last 5 seconds? When he saw them dribbling out the clock, what was he thinking?
He was thinking, let me do my thing. I'm here in Kansas. I don't quit. And I'm going to show him what I'm all about.
All right, so I would imagine part of this phone call is probably in result of what happened again in Kansas between Kansas and Kansas State. Now, certainly, Alexis, I'm not equating what happened with Georgie and what happened between Kansas and Kansas State, but you've seen where that comparison's been made. Does that make you angry? What was your reaction to what you saw?
Well, I was upset that the player Gordon did not get the same satisfaction that George Pappas got. I wish it had turned out differently for him. I wish he had gone down, you know, dunked the ball, flexed, and walked out feeling a little better.
I get that. Now, listen, I did say that I would really like your son's jersey. If I get it, great. If I don't, great. But I really appreciate you making that phone call right now and sharing what the family went through. What's your husband's name?
Well, George's dad is named Steve.
All right, Steve. Now, what was Steve's reaction to the whole thing? Like, what was the first thing he said to George when they got together and it was done?
After it was done, it was a little upsetting because we saw how upset George had gotten. I don't think that he understood that the entire basketball world would be able to read lips and see what he had said. And I didn't think he meant to flex. And so I think initially he was upset over what was going to happen to him the next day. But I guess because, you know, it blew up on Twitter and some people liked it, some people hated it. George, you know, hung his head low, stayed the course, and now he's doing okay.
I mean, you got a tough family. You got a tough family, tough Jersey family.
Well, we're from Jersey.
Yeah, exactly. I get that. I respect that. Let me finally ask you this. I know that the family and George have a lot of respect for King Rice. Were you concerned about what the coach would have to say? And the coach obviously was not thrilled with it. Were you concerned about that? What was your reaction to what the coach had to say?
Oh, yeah. I was really concerned, and I'm glad. You know, Coach Rice is great. We love him. And he did. He said what he had to say. I mean, it wasn't the dunk. It was the aftermath. If George had dunked and walked away, it would have been fine. He didn't have to put on a little show. I guess he just got carried away a bit.
I got to ask you, Alexis, one final thought. I've got a couple of kids, and one just started college. He played club baseball. He played high school baseball. I've got another son who plays high school baseball. It's been an absolute thrill watching these kids grow up playing baseball. What's it like to see your son playing D1 basketball?
There's nothing better.
Right?
There's nothing better. Letting your kids live their dreams, there's nothing better.
I knew that was
the
answer.
As long as they're happy and they feel love, that's all you could ever want for your children.
That's it. That's exactly it. So listen, if I get that jersey, great. But, and no conditions, but if I get that jersey, that boy of yours better sign it, okay?
He's going to sign it. I got to call King Rice. I got to get a jersey.
You do it. You do what you can. You're welcome to call this show. In the meantime, anytime you want. Alexis, so nice to meet you, and I'm so glad you made
Jim,
that phone
thank
call.
Thank you so much. Thanks for being a fan. We know, you know we are.
I know it. I love it. We are too. You have a great day. That's the Pappas family of New Jersey if you need them. What a blast. I love it. Mama's got fire. You know what I love about that, too? I love that she owned that. I love that she said, hey, listen, I'm George Pappas' mother. Let's go to Wichita. Mike. Good to have you, Mike. How are you?
Doing great, Jimmy Jam. Hey, I just called. I heard that tour stops are possibly making a comeback and that they're expected to change with the times. Good luck with that. One thing I know for sure, though, is a 2020 tour stop will be a freak show. There's only one place to have it, Jimmy, and that's KC. Tour Stop KC was the last great tour stop, and that was 18 years ago. And if you know clones the way I do, clones love nothing more than something that just turned 18. Think about the family reunion. Ray and KC's son is now some 20-something-year-old bigot ranting about Modern Family. Patty and Modesto will show up with a kid that looks suspiciously like Willie. Either way, Jim, I'll be there with a belly full of edibles, giggling my ass off at the kooks and the carnival. Please make this happen. Hey, Denver, stay in your lane. It was impossible for your tour stop to live up to the monster that was KC. You have the most amazing skylines in the world, but you also have the most repulsive-smelling citizens I've ever encountered. Props to Clark Hunt, who brought in Andy Reid after he was given the boot from Philadelphia. There is not a Chiefs fan alive who doesn't think this guy's the greatest coach in Chiefs history. War, my amazing delay, and Finn feeling better. War, Planet of the Apes on VHS for huge call of the day. were the Chiefs finally doing something I never thought I'd live long enough to see. Al?
Good night now!